Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
I urge the judge to do what he did, which was to sentence him for the rest of his life, that when he leaves prison, which means after his death, and he leaves prison virtually unmourned by anybody on this earth, that he will then go down to the depths of hell, where he'll join those other people who are in the mouths of Satan.
I'm going to do a terrific show today because I'm good enough, I'm smart enough, and doggone it, people like me. I suppose I'm such a success because my childhood was such a challenge.
Come on over, baby, whole lot of shaking going on. Yes, I say, come on over, baby.
It is the Savage Nation, and there's a whole lot of shaking going on, from a comedian in the Senate to Madoff victims with crocodile tears. Play it again, Sam.
Well, I say, come on over, baby. We got chicken in the corner. Woo, huh? Come on over, baby. Baby got the bull by the horn.
Yep. Comedian wins Senate seat. Senate now filibuster proof for Socialist Party USA. You know them as the Democrats, but I mean, let's pull the mask off the Democrats. It is the Socialist Party USA, and they now have a filibuster-proof majority. Let's hear it for Karl Marx. And then, of course, there's the other story. Or play the music better. Who cares about the music? The news, I mean the news. No one's home. The roads are empty. I thought the country's in a recession. The highways are empty. No one's working. And the reason I know everyone's on vacation is because my rotten, stinking neighbors are not burning fires or barbecuing every night. They're gone! Thank God they're in Tahoe, everybody! How can they all be broke if they're all in Tahoe? I have a special audience in studio tonight on the Savage Nation. An audience of three. Very rare occurrence. I have a 10-pound poodle, a live woman, and a semi-comatose fly. Now, the fly is not, according to many of you think it's the Obama fly, and it is. I actually bought the fly from eBay after Obama swatted it. The phone number here is 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. Norm Coleman, Republican, well, Republican in name only, you don't even know who he is, but he was a Republican. I would not say he was as bad a rhino as Spector, but he was a rhino, an unknown Republican, a get-along, go-along kind of guy. Today conceded the Minnesota Senate race to Al Franken, which means that the half-wit comedian will be placed in the Senate. Now, it is true that a Roman... what do you call those Roman Caesars? What was his name? Put a horse in a Senate seat, didn't he? Caligula thought so highly of the Roman Senate that he had one of the senators eliminated, so to speak. I think he had him go open a pizzeria in Calabria. And in the senator's seat, he put a horse. And he told the other senators, this is what I think of you. The horse has more sense than you do. Well, today we have the equivalent in that Obama has put a half-wit comedian in a Senate seat. And now this means that Obama, the dictator, will have the 60 votes that he needs to push through his neo-Marxist agenda without worrying about a Republican filibuster. That is, if he ever had to worry about it to begin with, which I doubt. Now that Obama has Al Franken, there is virtually nothing stopping the neo-Marxist leader from getting what he wants. This is not so much about electing a comedian. It's about Obama's unfettered agenda. He can now push through socialized medicine. He can push through his private military force, which is the most worrisome thing in the world. Remember that the first thing that the Bolsheviks did, well, one of the first things the early communists did in Russia after the revolution was they established a Red Guard. The Red Guard was composed of the most vicious street thugs and the most ideologically fanatic amongst the communist thugs in the street. He gave them weapons. Lenin gave them weapons and turned them into the Red Guard. It is frightening to believe that this could happen here, but I would put nothing past this administration. And because of the failure of the Republicans, nothing will stand in Obama's way except the Supreme Court, which now hangs by a thread like a loose tooth. This is the Savage Nation. The phone number is 1-800-449-8255. We can also go back to the Madoff victims. Oh, incidentally, Obama's disapproval rating is climbing steeply. And that is according to the Rasmussen poll. 31% now strongly approve of the way Obama is performing, while 33% strongly disapprove, which means it's an index rating of -2. And I believe that as the months progress, his disapproval rating will go way, way higher. Five states bracing for shutdowns. That includes the late great state of California, where 70% of the budget goes for health and education spending. I want to repeat that in case you don't know where your money's going. I live in California. California's been very good to me, and I've been very good to California. I pay a lot in taxes, and I've given a lot back to the state. But when I see that the roads are broken and that I don't have basic services in so many ways, and that 70% of the state's budget, the most highly taxed state in the nation, goes for health and education, and you say, well, wait a minute, that's good, isn't it? If so much of the money goes for education, why do we have the lowest test scores in the country? Because it doesn't go for education. It goes for propaganda. Not one state governor, although they're bracing for shutdowns, not one governor will close the emergency rooms to illegal aliens, meaning non-citizens who have not paid for and are not entitled to medical care. Not one state will shut the schools to illegal alien children. Many of them are illegal alien children. They're not even born here, and yet they're going to our colleges, and they're going to our schools, and they are not being barred from the schools. You may say, well, that's mean. My friends, I ask you, can we afford all of this anymore? The answer is we never could afford it. But now we have to pay the piper. And those are very important stories. The phone number is 1-800-449-8255. The show is The Savage Nation. These are the main topics, which is the filibuster-proof majority that Obama, the Marxist, now has with the seating of the comedian Al Franken, and, of course, the other story that I have mentioned, which is the Madoff victims crying and demanding that you bail them out. I want to talk about the Madoff victims for a moment. I'm sure they're not bad people. But you have to remember something. They're demanding that we pay them back for their bad investment with Madoff. They don't mean you. They say SIPC should pay them back. SIPC is an insurance fund that you fund. So in essence, they're saying that you should bail them out. Now, let me explain why that's wrong. Investment inherently has risk. I didn't invest with Madoff because I didn't know of him and it's too risky. I invested in a bank. I was making 1% a year or less than 1% a year. At some point, I had T-bills, God knows, 0.5% a year. I took the most conservative, safe investments I could find. I earned almost no interest. In other words, I parked my money. These people put it with Madoff the Gunniff, which is old German for crook. Madoff the crook was giving them 10% earnings each year. So let us say they put $1 million in with Madoff. He was paying them $100,000 interest every year. So now they lost everything. But what happened to the $100,000 a year that they were getting from Madoff? They spent it. So now they want me to pay them back their principal of $1 million. Many of them received the principal back through the $100,000 a year that they were getting. This is all a scam. So if you think Madoff was a crook, you're right. But now the victims are trying to play you for a sucker by saying they lost it all. They didn't lose it all. They spent it all. In other words, where did the earnings go? They were living on it. Do you understand this? Do you understand what I'm saying to you? Now, there's a subtext to this. The reason that the SEC didn't touch Madoff, even though they knew he was a crook of the highest order, is because Madoff bought off Charles Schumer. Madoff bought off Chris Dodd. Madoff bought off Kennedy. Madoff spent a fortune on the best senators he could find in the Democrat Party. They all were receivers of this largesse from Madoff, which is why the SEC was told not to investigate. Play the song again. I'm going to take a break and play with the fly and see if I can resuscitate it right here on the Savage Nation.
Yes, I say, come on over, baby. Baby, you can't go wrong. shaking. Oh, a lot of shaking going on.
Savage.
Well, the live audience in the Savage studio has been reduced to one live being. It is Teddy now. The fly is dead, I'm sorry to report. And the other member of the audience has left. I want to thank MD for listening to the Savage Nation. I can see that the new headline on his wonderful website has been changed to the Stuart Smalley character that Al Franken once played to mock gays with. That's right, Al Franken was well-known for mocking gays with his Stuart Smalley character. And if you think that that's a light note, listen to his mocking voice. Play it.
I'm going to do a terrific show today because I'm good enough, I'm smart enough, and doggone it, people like me.
I suppose I'm such a success because my childhood was such a challenge.
Thank you, everybody. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much. Franny and I are so thrilled that we can finally celebrate this victory, and I'm so excited to finally be able to get to work for the people of Minnesota.
He means get to work on, not for. So now, as I said to you, Caligula took out one of the senators from the Roman Senate when he was dictator, and he said, you know, you're all a bunch of worthless fools. A horse would do as good a job. And he actually put a horse in the seat of the senator that he had disappeared. I think he sent him to the Meadowlands of New Jersey from Rome on a special delivery package. And he put a horse there. And now, of course, we've put a horse's butt in the Senate in the form of this guy. It's unbelievable. Gay-bashing clown character is now a senator. Unbelievable to me. Las Vegas, Richard, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, thank you, bud. Hey, Al Franken, his whole career, he's never said anything as comical as what I just heard. He's a horse in the Senate.
No, of course not. Look, I'm going to talk about comedy for 1 minute. I'm a big television watcher. I need entertainment at night. And if I look at Showtime or I look at HBO and I see another comedian who simply gets up there and curses, puts down the church, puts down the family, puts down religion, puts down their parents, I understand it because they're all sick in the head. Have you recently seen a comedian that supports family values that does not use four-letter words on any of these channels? The answer is no. And that's because of the slime that run these channels. The fact of the matter is you don't have to resort to that kind of language in order to get people, you know, to tickle their funny bones, so to speak, Richard. Thanks for noticing. None of them are funny. They just use really, devious statements to attract your attention. That's all. Go ahead. What's the difference? I need music right now. My lungs hurt already from the show. Do you think I complain too much? I got to ask you something. I'm thinking about it. I'm doing like a lot of soul searching. I realize that I'm very anguished about society, and I'm never pleased by anything. I'm starting to realize that if I were listening, I'd actually like the show more because of it, because you got to think about the dynamics of it. I take a risk by sharing with you my displeasures, right? On the other hand, you say, well, why would anyone listen to that? The answer is because they're filled with such displeasure in their daily life that they like to hear that I also experience it, even though I shouldn't. The point is I shouldn't. I do have everything. You know, I drive around in my car and I see various bumper stickers. And some of them are like these self-help bumper stickers. I almost did a dyslexic thing, a self-help thing. Which say, what are you grateful for? And it stops you in your tracks. So sometimes when I'm lying in bed, grousing about how miserable my life is, I say to myself, what am I grateful for? And I have a big list of what I'm grateful for. And it stops me. It's not bad. Some of this self-help, pseudo-Christian stuff is pretty good. I like it. And it works for me. But it doesn't stop me from complaining. For example, if I go to a restaurant, I move tables several times. Do I do it for effect? No. I do it for reasons that makes sense. I mean, like last night I went to a local restaurant, and it was pretty empty. I come in, the table's there. Right away I see two things I don't like, and I ask Mrs. S to move with me. She's used to it, of course. Why did I move? Because behind her in the other booth to her head, the back of her head, was an older guy, younger woman, lovey-dovey, showing it couple. I didn't want to listen to them. I saw the bottle of wine. I saw the swirling of the glass from the trailer park trash that he picked up somewhere and he already turned into the second missus. I didn't want to watch it. To my left was a loud older couple that I knew were just getting dessert, and they were gassed up on the wine. I knew with two glasses of cheap wine and the sugar, I didn't stand a chance to digest so much as a pinto bean. I moved. Am I wrong for expressing this to you? Am I wrong for moving? The answer is no. I have to move tables in a restaurant to get where I want to sit, or I don't want to go. It's not that I'm doing it to be difficult. Do you do that as well? Does anyone else live this way, or am I the only one on earth who does this in a restaurant? Number two, the children, thank God for them, made it to adulthood. They're adult children. I want to thank God that they did get this far. But they knew by the time they were a certain age, like 8 or 9, that when we checked into a hotel on vacation, they knew that whatever room we were given was only the first room. They didn't even unpack their bag after a few years. They would put the bag in the room and say, Dad, we'll be back in a while. Let us know what room you're actually going to be in. Because inevitably, the first room was no good. It's what hotels do to families. They hate families. There's a secret. They hate families. They hate traditional families. And inevitably, the snotty bell clerk or whoever it was, desk guy, they always gave us a roomie the next to construction. I would call from thousands of miles away. Is it a quiet room? Yes, sir. Is there any ongoing construction? No, sir. Have you sprayed the room with pesticides, perfume, or any other pungent components before we get there? Because we all don't want to. No, sir. We understand it's a scent-free room. Anything else, sir? Whatever you ask for, they give you the opposite. So I'd get there. Next door would be heavy construction with a pile going in right out the window. The room would have been sprayed by somebody from another country for whom a room must smell like a cat house in Tijuana on a July day. And of course, and then to top it all off, there'd usually be some kind of stain of a bodily fluid underneath the bed cover when you pulled back. That happened to me, I swear to you. I told you about it. We went to Cancun last winter. End room, good air, everything fine. I knew something was wrong. I pulled back the bed cover. It looked like the horse's head from The Godfather had been removed prior to my arrival. Is there any wonder I moved?
Savage.
It is the Savage Nation, 1-800. You know the number. I forgot the number already. It's a lot. There's a lot of news. I realize you don't know it because if you turn the television on, all you see is the king of pill popping and his entourage. It's astounding to me how dumb the people are in the media. I have never seen anything like it. This is the epitome of the end of news, what we see going on. In considering, in other words, that there's big news going on in the world, the kids in Iran being beaten, tortured, killed, and jailed. That's a dead story because Obama didn't want it covered. North Korean ship changing course today, not covered because Obama is again a failure on that department. The biggest story from my point of view is that Hillary and Obama have sided with, how can I say it? Evil communists, Fidel Castro, mass murderer Fidel Castro, Hugo Chavez, overt communist. They're on the same track, same side as them with regard to Honduras. That's such a giveaway of where they're coming from and how they have never abandoned their Leninist inclinations, in my opinion. But there's only so much a few of us in the media can do. I'm not alone. Thank God there are others doing a fairly good job. And without them, there'd be nothing left. And that's why I know this illegitimate government will go after all of us, one after the other. Now, I was targeted first because I am the most outspoken, and I'm sure that that's who sent these condemning outtakes from my shows out of context to England and got me on the UK ban list. And for those of you who have supported the Michael Savage Defense Fund, again, I want to reiterate, this case is ongoing. My lawyers are working. I am feverishly working to get my name off the list. I have not yet decided to pull the trigger on the lawsuit. That may or may not happen in the near future, but we're working around the clock on this issue. I want to get my name off the list, not only for my sake, but primarily for my sake. But I'm warning you that if they get away with taking an innocent man like me and putting me on a least desirable list with known Hamas murderers, you're next. I'm telling you, you and the media who listen to this show, you're going to be next. They're going to go after us one after the other. And I'm pretty sure that it's the Obama administration itself because, and the reason I say that, I gave the State Department, Hillary Clinton in particular, an opportunity to cross party lines, to do the right thing, to walk across the aisle and say, you know what, I don't like a thing that Michael Savage says, but I'm the Secretary of State. He had no reason, they had no reason to condemn him like this because we believe in freedom of speech. After all, that's what President Obama talks about every day, freedom of speech. So therefore, we're going to move heaven and earth to get Michael Savage's name cleared in the UK. Hillary Clinton did not even respond to the letter. Yes, some subaltern in the State Department made some minor moves and nothing happened. So you've got to understand that although I'm first, I'm not last. You're going to be next. Those of you who had the opportunity to step up to the plate and be heard on the freedom of speech, you hemorrhoid, you golfer, you wall banger, shame on you because you're going to be next. I can guarantee it. But let's go on to other stories. The Madoff victims, the fact that they have seated the comedian Al Franken in the Senate. These are very big stories, and I think that they're worthy of talking. New York City, Joseph, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Yes, I believe that the SEC and the U.S. government are complicit in the Madoff scam, and therefore they are financially responsible.
Well, hold on now. Let's start from the top. I know that your opinion is not yours alone. When you say the SEC is responsible, you mean the taxpayer, don't you?
I mean government employees that working for the
taxpayer. Well, wait. But who do you think is going to pay the SIPC fund? Where does the money come from?
Taxes, of course.
All right. So you mean that the taxpayer owes the Madoff investors their principal back. But let's start from the top, since I'm very good at figuring out math. I don't need a computer. Let's say someone gave Madoff $1 million 10 years ago, and he was earning 10% interest per year. How much money did he take out of that fund?
$1 million.
All right. So why is he complaining that he lost $1 million? He lost nothing.
That's one example. There are many. What about people that...
Well, let's take that example. A guy put in $1 million. 10 years later, he took out over $1 million, by the way, with compounded interest, and he spent it. Now he's complaining, oh, the principal is gone. Well, that's what a Ponzi scheme is. So who should get compensated, Joseph?
People that invested at the end that didn't take their money out. And those
all right, so it's the guys and the women at the end got the short end of the stick. All their principal was gone, and they received nothing back, right? Is that what you're saying?
Yes, and I'm also saying that SEC...
Well, hold on, but let's take them as individual cases. Why should I pay them back for a bad investment? If I make an investment, is it not with inherent risk?
Because they're paying taxes for the government to regulate the industry. The government did not do its job. Therefore, the government has to replenish the money that they lost.
Well, I don't agree with you. I think that the people at the SEC who didn't do their job should go to jail. And I think that they should be fined. I think the money should come out of their personal bank accounts. I would like to see the head of the SEC investigated. How come Chris Cox is... above all of this? How come his name never comes up? Let's go to that. The head of the SEC was a man named Chris Cox, Republican. Why has his name never come up in any of this Madoff stuff?
I guess he has political connections.
I'm not saying he did anything wrong, but I haven't heard from him. What about our former Treasury Secretary, old Hank Paulson, who ripped off $1 trillion of taxpayer money to bail out Wall Street and did things that were incomprehensible under Bush? Why is he never investigated?
Because he was working for Bush. Why isn't Bush investigated?
But why isn't Obama investigated with regard to his place of birth?
Should be. He was born in Kenya. I agree.
So in other words, there are certain people in this country who are above the law. We're not amongst them, are we, Joseph?
We could agree on that 100%.
All right, well, at least we disagree on some things and agree on others. And therefore, you won't go away, man. In fact, I like you so much today, even though you normally break my you-know-what. I'm going to send you a copy of Psychological Nudity for July 4th. Doesn't even want it. All right. No, we'll send it to him. I think I'm going to work on the next installment of Psychological Nudity. I'm working on a lot of things again. I've come out of my doldrums. I had a two-month job, 2 months of doldrums. Wow. I found out what I've known all along, though, about my own mind. I am riboflavin and or thiamine dependent. My psyche is riboflavin and thiamine dependent. Many of you don't even know what I'm talking about, because many of you take vitamins and, you know, it boosts your mood, particularly if you've been doing it with the proper supplements for long enough, as I have. I don't think you understand how important B2 and B1 are. Many of you know about B3 and niacin. You probably know nothing about riboflavin and thiamine. I'm somewhat of a minor expert on these particular B vitamins with regard to mood stimulation. But I don't want to go into it right now. I tell you, when I miss a few days of B2 and B1, I have a sense of doom. I have a sense that, you know, nothing's right. I have a sense that, you know, doom is around the corner. All things are bad. And then when I get the right B2, B1 levels, I can feel it almost within minutes. My vision improves and my mood improves. And you won't hear that from your local doctor, by the way, because they're going to put you on Prozac, Lipitor, Prilosec, the one for the down below. What's that one called? Viagra. Do you know how many different drugs the average man over 50 is on? Do you have any idea how many drugs you don't need they put you on? Today came out what I've been telling you for 20 years now, that acetaminophen is a kidney killer and a liver killer. And the reason I knew that is because there was so many people with liver damage in this country. And I try to figure out over 20 years why all of a sudden was there such a cluster of a demand for liver transplants. And then I turn the TV on, and they're telling normal healthy athletes, men and women, to take 6-8 Tylenol a day. They made it look like it was a vitamin for you, when I knew at least 15 years ago in graduate school that acetaminophen was a very dangerous drug with regard to your kidneys and your liver. I used it extremely sparingly, if at all. I prefer aspirin, by the way, for any kind of pain. For me, aspirin's a minor miracle drug, and it has a safety record, bar none, in all the painkiller category, incidentally. But what I'm getting at is, in addition to the Tylenol and Tylenol-related acetaminophen drugs, you are on 6 to 8 prescription drugs. Like, if I rarely go to a doctor for something, which happens from time to time, the first thing they say to me is, what medications are you on? And I say, none. The nurse looks up at me. None, she says? A man your age on no drugs? I said, no, no drugs. How is that possible? Because I have a degree in nutrition, a PhD. I'm a practitioner of what I preach. I've written books on the subject. I don't need them. Thank you very much. Not yet. I may. Tomorrow I may need them. Okay? Can't you kick the drug habit? Because it's not only good for your health, it's good for society. One of the reasons we're going broke is because you've been turned into a drug-addicted victim of the medical pharmaceutical establishment, in my opinion. Whatever. Now let's go to the callers. Fort Lauderdale, Michael, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Dr. Savage, you're not the only one who lives by that code of complaining. You are like a carbon copy of listening to my dear old dad. And it's like you
all right, now, but here, okay, I accept it. I'm an older guy in radio. In fact, I'm probably at this point the most senior member of the talk radio clan, even though we all hate each other and are jealous of each other. I am the most senior member. But do you find it bad radio or good radio to listen to my problems?
I find it wonderful and captivating because it brings up just so many wonderful memories and of my relatives from the Bronx and family vacations that turned to misery and lousy hotels.
Oh, it's like your family vacations that turned to misery. That is such. Why does that make me happy? What's wrong with me?
I don't know, but you know, I've been in many a room. I was Williamsburg, Virginia. We were baited and switched where we got a bum room next to a railroad track.
And I'll bet when you call in advance, you told them quiet room, and they said, yes, sir, right?
Oh, absolutely. It was, you know, it was the second coming of Valhalla, and we ended up in some podunk flea bag motel. It was.
Oh. So, in other words, my complaints, although they're kind of tiresome, they're actually real, and you like listening to them because they're based on reality.
Affectionately, and my family referred to them as my father's observations. They're no longer.
So when your father took you on vacation, you changed rooms a couple of times each trip?
Absolutely. We changed hotels.
Oh, he was a step ahead of me.
Oh, he's.
I didn't have the gumption to take the kids to another whole building. Although I was close to it a few times. What was your father like in a restaurant? How many tables a night?
I was just going to get to that. How about this? He's the kind of guy that would be barking out rebuttals to these New England ponytail, Oxford shirt-wearing liberals. He'd be behind.
What do you mean? He would listen to them at other tables?
Oh, he would eavesdrop, and then he would chime in something. He would retort.
Oh, so he would actually take them on at the other table.
Okay, here's a priceless story. You'll get a kick out of this. We're in a supermarket parking lot. A kind of a young man's car drives by with that South Beach techno music blaring. There's the person in the passenger car has long hair. So my father says, hey, lady, you're a little old to be playing that kind of music, aren't you? Well, anyway, the car parks and out gets this Fabio-looking man.
Oh, a muscular guy with long hair. Here it comes.
Yeah. So the South Boston Irish came out of my father, and it was a sight to behold.
Well, what happened? Now you got me on the edge of my seat. What happened?
They exchanged words, and in order to make the peace, my father didn't know really how to do it, so he bought him a flower. He said, because I don't know what to make of you. So he bought him a flower.
Yeah, but the guy didn't take a swing at your father. He probably knew your father was just a guy with strong opinions and guts.
My father's a tough South Boston Irish guy. Cop for 25 years, Vietnam veteran. He doesn't take lip service.
Yeah, but wait a minute. In his 60s, he could have gotten his butt whipped by the young Fabio, right?
Oh, absolutely not. My father.
What do you mean? Your father could have beaten up the Fabio character?
My father scares the death out of me, and I'm a grown man.
Oh, you mean your father's still with us?
Yes, my father's. I have the pleasure of my company of my father routinely. Thank
you. Oh, you're a lucky man. Oh, you're lucky that he's still living.
And again, I want to thank you for just, you know, bringing me down with those memories and just, you know, all the guys from New York.
Hey, let me ask you, Michael, the weather in Fort Lauderdale has been very rainy in the last few months, right? It's on and off every day?
On and off every day, 3 o'clock, like clockwork. And my summer baseball program, we're getting rained out.
Because I'm planning on going to Florida soon. I know in the summer. Why? Because the water's 85 degrees, that's why. But the rain is keeping me away.
I would love to take you tarpon fishing.
Yeah, it'll be a one-way trip. It's a Sicilian fishing trip, a one-way trip, huh?
Absolutely not. I would love to take you into some pristine country and the back country and teach you how to fish for tarpon and bonefish and be in places.
That's amazing. So you do the real McCoy. What kind of boat do you use?
I use a Hughes, a 19-foot flat skiff with a tunnel hull. So I don't.
Oh, you're a real fisherman.
I moved down here from Boston specifically.
Yeah, and you thought you were getting away from the liberals, huh?
No, I moved into Liberal Central.
Yes.
Thank God
Fort Lauderdale, the whole area of South Florida is so communistic, it's frightening.
Este es porque yo hablo español, señor.
No, except for the Cubans. And by the way, the young Cubans are already twisted in their brains. They're half Castroites.
Actually, you know what? The Cubans down here, every one of them in their shops has an American flag. Every one of them.
Yes, the older Cubans are patriotic. Rock rib conservatives. The younger ones have been brainwashed by America.
Children I teach, Dr. Savage, they are wonderful. They are patriots. They get it. They listen to their grandmothers and grandfathers about the Russian shoes and the guys being yanked out of their houses for saying the wrong thing and a chivato on every corner. They get it. And the kids that I teach are wonderful.
What do you teach, Michael?
I teach mathematics.
Oh, God bless you. Yep, well, they don't make him like your father anymore.
And
hey, Michael, did you read that story of the cop from the Bronx, the detective for 22 years, and what happened to him with that punk, the kid who shot someone in an elevator in the face?
Yeah, and then I want to know how the kid got an MP3 player into the interrogation room.
All right, now, I talked about this last night at home, and you know what the smartest woman in the world told me? She said someone set that detective up inside the police station. In other words, if they frisked the punk after finding him and it was a slam dunk case, then they send the detective in. What was he like, a Serpico? He was one of these honest cops just doing his job and the other guys in the department were on the take? Because they should have gotten that MP3 player out of his pocket.
Absolutely. Mrs. S. is very insightful, Dr. Savage.
Well, all right. So somebody set that cop up. But I want to say on this show, Michael, if they take the cop down and take away his pension, I'm going to make a contribution. I'm going to do a defense fund for him.
We'll put it up on the website. I'll chip in.
God bless, Michael. Hold on. Michael, stay on the line. I want to send you a free copy of Psychological Nudity for yourself and your children and your dad for the week. What a great caller that is. I'll be right back. Savage.
Say a few words about an important milestone that we've reached in Iraq. Today, American troops have transferred control of all Iraqi cities and towns to Iraq's government and security forces.
And yay, the communists have won. The Obama Communist Party USA has won. And I want all you do-gooders listening to the show to tell me in as few words as possible what you think is going to happen in Iraq within the next 3 months, 6 months, 9 months, and a year. The answer is Iran wins. And all of the men who died, all the men walking around without eyes, feet, or arms, will have lost their vision or their limbs for nothing. All because of you. Terrible, terrible story. Terrible story. The whole story is a nightmare from the beginning. The whole Iraq adventure was a nightmare. Bush 1 had it right. He went in and he didn't decimate the entire Iraqi military. And I said so right on the show. People, you remember Bush 1 went in under Schwarzkopf. Pardon me, I mixed them up. He went in under Schwarzkopf. And if you remember correctly, in the first Gulf War, Bush 1 and his team were so smart that instead of destroying Iraq and the Iraq military and Toto, they allowed the Republican Guard to survive and some of the military and the Air Force to survive because they were wise enough to understand that they were a counterforce to the Iranians. Bush, too, and the dummies surrounding him went in and did the exact opposite. They decimated the entire Iraqi military, so they thought. They took out the whole guard, the Praetorian Guard, but they didn't. And as a result, there was a guerrilla war for 5 or 6 years. And the unintended consequences of it has been an unmitigated disaster for Iraq and the world, and most importantly for the United States of America. It is what bankrupted America. If you say, well, okay, it was Freddie Mae and Freddie Mac, I wouldn't disagree with you. It was Barney Frank forcing the banks to make loans to unqualified minorities and illegal immigrants. We know that. That's a given. But it was also the Iraq War. So we have mismanagement on both sides.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
A terrific show today because I'm good enough, I'm smart enough, and doggone it, people like me.
I suppose I'm such a success because my childhood was such a challenge.
I received a very gracious call from Senator Coleman a little while ago. He wished me well. I wished him
my show. A horse's butt would be a better choice for a senator than this half-baked, rotten comedian. Al Franken now is a Democrat socialist giving the Socialist Party USA a filibuster-proof majority, in case you didn't know that. And there we go again. So let's start this hour off on a high note. Let's play some music along the lines of what we had in the last hour.
Goodness gracious, great balls
of fire. I was talking about the news of the day. Like it matters. And then I was talking about I complain a lot. Because that matters more to me than the news of the day sometimes. Cato the Elder, the Roman historian, wrote that the average Rome, turn it off, they can't do. I told you, they can't hear me. Cato the Elder, the ancient Roman historian who I knew personally, wrote to me personally the following. He said that in ancient Rome, the average Roman didn't care what the legions were doing in this country or that country. They didn't care what they were doing in Italy or what they were doing in Germany at the time or France. What the legions were doing was not that important to them. What mattered to the ancient Roman was the pebble in the shoe. What he meant was the day-to-day problems of being a citizen in ancient Rome. And in that regard, when I'm off the air, what matters to me, sure, I get steamed up over the news, but inevitably I have to stop it because nobody wants to listen to it. They can't take it. They cannot. So if I go to a restaurant, which I do, unfortunately, more than I should, I mean, I love food, so what am I going to do? You can't cook every night. I have to move tables, or I go to a hotel. I don't go anymore. I used to when the kids were young. I'd move rooms. We were talking about that. And I asked you, do you mind me telling you about it? And I got such wonderful callers that really, I mean, they were great listening to. I could see why you like listening to me, because I'm not the only one who does this. I think that everybody would like to have the guts to do it, but they don't have the nerve to do it. It's not that they don't know that the table's bad or that the food stinks. It's that alone, it's not that they don't want to bother. They don't want to upset themselves and everyone around them, so they don't do it. It doesn't mean that you're a bad guy. But I think if more of us demanded better service, better food, I think there'd be less to complain about. I really do. I'll give you a little example, a minor example. Let's reduce it to the real Lilliputian level. Since I can do nothing about the Marxist Party USA under Obama, I can do a lot about which seat I have in a restaurant and what food I get, all right? Now, I don't go out of my way to make a trouble. I don't want trouble. I'll give you an example. There's a hole-in-the-wall Thai restaurant near where I live, a dump of the lowest order, but it's clean. The owner's a nice guy. I've watched his daughter grow up from the time she was a kid to college age. So, you know, there's a little hole-in-the-wall. I patronize it once a week, whatever. The food is actually very good. And when I go in there, it reminds me of being in the third world, which I like. It reminds me of my years as being a poor graduate student in Fiji. I sit in the back. It's got ugly mirrors like from a museum with palm trees in it. It's so retro bad that it's refreshing because they don't try to be what they're not. You know what I mean? There's no orchids on the table. It's like oil cloth with plastic. But him and his wife cooks, and he has no personality whatsoever. One of the most personality-less owners I've ever seen in my life. He probably owns the entire shopping center. All right, so I go in there. I got tired of everything else. I go in there. I got into a Thai jag. I went already twice in a row last week. So I said, I'm going nuts. So the next day I figured I would be really wild and I order a takeout dish. That's after he knew me now. Every time I go and he says, someone wants to buy you a six-pack of beer, and I say to him, no, thank you, I don't need it, blah, blah, blah. I go in there. I eat a good meal. The next night, I don't want to go out, so I call up and I say, it's me, how you doing? I order a takeout dish. He cheats me again. It's half the size. So I started to steam up. I said, what's wrong with this man? When I'm in there, he says nice things to me, gives me a nice dish. He cannot help it. If you order takeout, you get half the size. You get half the size, one shrimp, two shrimp maximum, in a shrimp dish that costs $10.95. And if you order the chicken curry, it's about a piece and a half of chicken that must cost them a nickel, if that much. So I said to myself, should I call this jerk and tell him, or should I just let it go and not eat there anymore? And I said, wait a minute, I like the guy's food. I couldn't help myself. I call him up. And I say, hey, Johnson, listen to me. This is Michael. How are you? I said, you just cheated me on a takeout dinner. He says, oh, no, 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 no. I said, oh, yes, 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 yes. He said, I told the cook it's for you. I said, well, she screwed me. She gave me two shrimp and a piece of chicken the size of my thumb. No, 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 he says. And I say, yes, yes, yes. And I said, the reason I'm calling you is because I like you. And I said, if you do this to people who you know, you're going to have no business left. I said, but you're not going to see me for a long time. All right, so maybe I shouldn't have done it. Why must the man cheat me on takeout dinners? Why is it in general I find the takeout food they give you a screwing on? Why is that? They don't know you. If you're ordering takeout food and you tell them who you are, they should give you more, not less. They can't help it. There's something going on in restaurants. Maybe they're desperate. I don't really know. But today, I tell you, I got the opposite. There's a Japanese in the neighborhood that I ordered from. Usually good. They gave me a screwing about a week ago. I called them screaming because they're always too busy. They're always yelling. So I said, slow down. I'm trying to order dinner. Stop screaming. I order a dinner. There was no seafood. It's called a seafood yaki udon. It was yucky udon. Let me tell you that. It was seafood yucky udon. There was like nothing in it except greasy vegetables. So I complained. So today I called in for this order. There's Franken complaining. Get a walk. He was never a Republican anyway. Why do I care what he does? He's got a weird looking face, doesn't he? What's his name? Coleman. Coleman is as weird looking as Franken. I got to tell you the truth. Coleman's face looks as weird as Franken's face. It matters to me who wins in Minnesota. They deserve Al Franken in Minnesota. As far as I'm concerned, they deserve Yakov Lenin in Minnesota for their politics. Never mind the Franken. They'll see what they're going to get soon. They got what they wanted here. This is what they wished for. They got it. I called him up today. I said, I want a seafood yaki udon to go. So right away, the big boss comes on. He says, you don't like a seafood yaki udon. You say that time no good. So I said, John, I complained because there was no seafood, and I like your restaurant. He says, all right, I'll make it for you special. And he did. It was better than ever. So in some cases, it's good. In some cases, it's bad. Now, U.S. troops are pulling out of Iraq, which is what every liberal in America dreamed of. The day has come. And now when the bombs go off and the children are mutilated, you will have no one to blame but yourself, which is why I'd rather talk about bad restaurant food or shifting around in hotels. That's all. Sacramento, Fred, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Mr. Savage, it is a privilege to talk to you.
Can I say something? I don't want to be a wise guy. It's not a privilege. I do it for a living. Without you, I'd have no show. Guys like Wallbanger need to hear that because they're insecure and have nothing else other than the radio. But go ahead, please.
Exactly. I know what people say, and it's not.
Well, you're right. A great American. Yeah, you're a real great one. You're a great American. Okay, go on, please.
We won't mention his name, I understand. Always prepare to be disappointed. You know, if you go out and have a meal. If you go here, go there, see people, always expect to be disappointed and hope for the best. But be prepared.
Oh. You know? Oh, in other words, don't expect to have a good time and a good meal.
Exactly.
And you know, well, actually, it's a philosophically correct way to approach restaurants, and now that you mention it. Expect to have bad food and a bad time.
Exactly. And then
well, here's how I drive around on the road now. If I get in my car, I have to go down a certain two-lane road to get to another location, right? Yeah. Inevitably, there are bicyclists with jester costumes on who like to ride in the middle of the road and block you even though you can't go around them. Or they'll come speeding on the other lane, and if anyone gets behind them and swerves, they can cause a head-on collision. Normally, I honk my horn just to ruin their day. Because I hate them. Okay, I hate them because they're going to cause an accident. They're going to kill somebody. Mrs. S. tells me not to honk the horn. She says, don't bother. And I try not to when anyone's in the car. Even the dog doesn't like it. But I hate rude bicyclists because I bicycle and I keep all the way to the right because I don't want to get run over. I don't want to cause an accident. These people are the most snotty AHs you've ever seen. They're all from San Francisco. They all truck their bicycles out to Marin County, and then they ride like they own the road, and the cops do nothing. The CHP ought to do something about them, like take their tricycles away from them and put them in jail. Okay, but the fact of the matter is, what I do now is when I get on this road, I count to 10. I say to myself, you're going to have 10 incidents between point A and point B of rude bicyclists that are going to try and destroy your day. And you know what I do? I count now. I usually get to 2 before I start screaming and honking the horn.
Savage.
I never get past 2. By the second one, the fuse is gone. The fuse blew out. I say give it to 10, but usually by 2 or 3, it's over. I can't take it. I don't know what they're doing on the road, those bums. They all drive cars to bring the bicycle to the country road. Who are they fooling?
Exactly. You got to put that out of your mind because why should that matter to you? But the thing is, me and you, we can't put that out of our minds because
I can't put it out of my mind because it's a matter of social disorder. What it is there's a social contract. If I pay taxes and I drive a car, my road should be clear. I'm paying taxes for the highway patrol to make sure these AHs do not block the lane. That if they do, they pick them up, take their tricycles and throw them in the bay and arrest them. But the CHP doesn't do this for me. You understand? I pay grotesque taxes. Why do they not patrol the road, I ask myself, right?
I'm not brainwashed. I look at life the right way. I see things under the skin. It's all good. I look at a beautiful day today. Well, it's a beautiful day today, but there's a lot of stuff.
What do you do if you go to a restaurant and next to you is a loud liberal who starts giving a lecture, a political lecture? How do you handle that? An Obama lover. See, I don't do politics in a restaurant. I'm very conservative, but when I go out to dinner, I never do politics. I don't talk at a table about politics because I would find it offensive if someone did it around me. Why is it that liberals usually shoot their mouths off about what Obama said or what the local liberal newspaper wrote? Why do they think I want to listen to that when they don't even know who I am? Why do they inflict themselves and everybody around them?
They want to look better.
Answer, because they can, because they know that you won't do anything about it. The fact is that I have a radio show. I am outspoken. Some would call me a loudmouth. But you have an option. You could turn the station off. You could turn on any other station right now, and you can get nothing but liberal pap for the rest of the day. When you go to a restaurant, you're a captive audience. And so, therefore, if someone does that, they are doing it strictly to be aggressive and rude and hostile. How do you deal with it? I'll give you an example. I knew a guy who went to a restaurant, and next to him was a couple with an infant. Usually the guy is over 50, balding, ponytail, with a somewhat, let us say, not whatever, a 35-year-old wife with an infant. Already she's the mother that she always wanted to be. She left the pointy shoes behind, and suddenly she discovered motherhood. And the baby is crying, and they do nothing about it, ruining everyone's meal in the restaurant. So this caller said to me, he got up, he told the owner, charge me, I'm leaving, and he put 10 bucks down on the guy's table right to his face. He got in his face, and he said, here, next time you go out, you can afford a babysitter, and he left. That's a classy thing, right? I'll be right back. Savage. Gentlemen, as you well know, I can go high, I can go low, and I can go in between. And what I've done so far is attract your attention with some light stories about restaurants and hotels and this and that. But I want you to understand what is going on in America right now is a struggle for the very soul of America. This struggle will either result in your enslavement or in your continued freedom. Right now, we are going through a mini Maoist revolution in the United States of America with Obama playing Mao Zedong. I don't think many of you understand the danger you are in. I have an important book in my hand called Out of Mao's Shadow, Stories from the Struggle for China's Soul by Philip P. Pan, published in June of 2008. I'm going to read you a paragraph about what went on in China underneath Mao Zedong, and I want you to try to put that in context of what's going on in America right now. It says, few imagined the tragedy that would unfold when Mao launched the Cultural Revolution in May of 1996, with a call to, quote, denounce capitalist representatives in the academic, education, news, arts, and publishing circles, close quote. Party leaders in Chongqing, like others across the country, assumed a movement similar to the anti-rightist campaign was underway. Notice anti-rightist campaign. And every time you turn on MSNBC or any of the other channels, you know how they sneer at the word right-winger? Well, they're Maoists, and they would like to see you put into a prison camp at the very least. Whether you know it or not, they're trying to destroy you and your way of life. Don't take it lightly. They're your enemy. I'll continue. So party leaders thought it was similar to the anti-rightist campaign that was underway. And they sent work teams into newspapers, schools, universities, and other cultural departments with orders to identify and purge a handful of, quote, capitalist representatives in the leadership of each institution. But by the end of July, Mao Zedong made clear he had more in mind than a routine witch hunt. In Beijing, his agents had quietly encouraged university students to organize themselves into Red Guard units, and when they clashed with the party's work teams, Mao surprised his colleagues by backing the students. To rebel is justified, he declared. Bombard the headquarters, he commanded. The work teams were withdrawn, and the men who sent them in, top party leaders, came under attack. Edged on by Mao Zedong at Nuremberg-style rallies in Tiananmen Square, the Red Guards were given free rein to unmask, quote, revisionists and capitalist roaders hiding in positions of authority, and they killed them. And there was mass execution across China. Now you say, what the heck does this have to do with America under Obama? It has everything to do with America and Obama. I'm warning you that his alignment with Chavez, with Castro, with Hillary Clinton taking the side of Chavez and Castro, if you do not see the emerging dictatorship in America, you are not only blind, you're a danger to yourself and everyone around you. It may not be that Obama intends to create the equivalent of Red Guards in America, but I'm very worried about something he said during the campaign. Do you have that soundbite, guys? If you do, we're going to play it when we come back, where Obama virtually said that once he had total power, he would create the equivalent of Red Guards. I'll play it when I come back.
Savage.
It is the Savage Nation, troops out of Iraq, a comedian into the Senate, Madoff victims that want you to pay for their bad investment, etc., and so on. We're talking about that and other topics. But before the break, I read to you of what went on in China under the communist Mao Zedong, how he created a Red Guard of the most vicious students who then went around killing other revolutionaries in addition to capitalists. And you say, well, what does it have to do with America? Don't be silly. Obama's just a nice liberal. Listen to this.
We cannot continue to rely only on our military in order to achieve the national security objectives that we've set. We've got to have a civilian national security force that's just as powerful, just as strong, just as well-funded.
Now, if Obama creates a civilian national security force, he will be creating the Red Guards. And they will go after every political enemy in the country the way the Red Guards did for the early communists in Russia and the way they did it for Mao Zedong in China. And you'll know that it's over. And whether this could happen is another story. I'm sure it could happen. It's not a question of could it happen. It's theoretically possible. The question is, will it happen? And I don't think you understand the danger you are in the fact that Obama clearly stated what he was going to do if he won. It didn't mean he would do it the first day. First, he had to do what all dictators do, which is get control of finance, which he did, by the way, with the help of the financiers who he smeared. Don't you understand how this worked? The team behind Obama is so smart that in order to get the capitalists who screwed you in their pocket, they took your tax money in TARP funds and bailout funds and bought them off with it through Goldman Sachs. They even had the audacity under George Bush to turn Goldman Sachs, which was a private investment bank, into a bank so they could qualify for TARP funds. Straight out bunko of the greatest order. The greatest theft in American history was not Madoff. The greatest theft in American history, in my opinion, was not Bernie Madoff. It was Goldman Sachs. It still is Goldman Sachs, in my opinion. What's good for Goldman Sachs is not necessarily good for America. All right. So first he buys off the financiers through bailouts that they're not qualified for, meaning taking your tax money and giving these pigs billions in dollars so they can continue their thievery, not only in this investment bank, but in many others and in banks in general. Now he owns the banks. Then he takes over General Motors and he rewards the unions and busts out America's premier automobile company. In your lifetime, did you ever think this would happen? Destroys it, decimates it, breaks it apart, destroys it. He breaks up Chrysler and he bails out a private investment group known as Cerberus Capital Management, not even a public company, private investors headed up by a guy who used to be a Treasury Secretary who also came from Goldman Sachs, again, bailing them out with your money. He owns them. Socialized medicine, socialized climate control, one step at a time, one giant step at a time until eventually he has total power, until he silenced all of the powerful forces in America. Then he could create the Red Guard that he warned you he would create. He actually signaled and told you what he would create. But the vermin in the media, don't get me started because I'll start smashing things here. These nice boys and girls in the media who are literally the people who have ruined this country. These people in television who have destroyed America and are trying to steal your freedom itself are the enablers of the emerging Mao Zedong revolution in the United States of America, in my opinion. It can still be stopped. It can still be stopped if enough of you wisen up fast enough to what's coming down in this country. You understand that? San Diego, Tanya, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Hi, Michael. I went to a political conservative meeting this weekend in San Diego with a man who was making a 40-city tour. And after the presentation, it was very wonderful. Everybody was all conservatives. They were all standing around talking, and everybody was talking, started into conservative talk radio, and everybody was saying, oh, yeah, no for that guy, no for all the big names. And then I said, well, what about Michael Savage? And they all looked at me and said, he's the only one who will give you the right and the correct and the honest answers. And I said,
and I was the only one who wasn't at that rally. Is that correct?
We wish. Oh, my God. If you would have been there, it would have been.
I have nothing against the showman who had put it on, pretending that they wrapped themselves in the flag to love the troops. Did any of them ever give a dime of their own money for the troops, or they went there only to be loved and worshipped? I'm going to ask you, did any of the great patriots who attended this soldier-loving festivity in San Diego, did they contribute any of their own money to the troops or to any troop-related organization that you know of?
I think they have, yes.
Good. I'm glad to hear it, because I doubt it. I'd like to know the exact amount. The day a cheap lawyer from New York who poses as a patriot gives 10 cents from his own pocket is the day I'll raise a flag over Macy's. I don't believe they gave a dime of their own money. And I think that it's sickening to wrap yourself in the flag of the American troops when they themselves are not military men. That's the reason I didn't attend. I think it's sickening for them to do so and pretend that they're so patriotic. Because the patriotic thing would be for them to abandon their careers in radio and volunteer for the military in some form or other and not make such a show about it. They did it for their own ego and also for their own careers, which is why I didn't go. If I want to help the troops, I send them my own money or raise money for them, as I did. But, you know, to each his own, that's all. Everyone has their own way of doing things. I don't like using the troops as a career-advancing technique. You know what I'm saying?
Yes. They were all for you, though, Michael, and they didn't have anything good to say about the other conservative talk show people.
Well, wait. You mean the people were for me?
Yes. 100%.
But not the wall banger. Not the wall banger. Not the others who wrapped themselves in the flag. Certainly not the hemorrhoid with ears.
Oh, none of them. They were saying the only one who you should listen to is Michael Savage. Because
the people love me. Look, I know that, Tanya. The people love me. But I'm one man alone, and I have my reasons for going and not going to certain events. I just want to summarize. I will not use the troops for self-advancement. If others wish to do so, that is their right. Thank you for the call. That's all. So here we are. Let's go back to the callers on every topic, from restaurants to boating. It's the July 4th weekend. The roads are empty. Half the people are gone already, I can tell you right now. I can tell you that because the restaurants in the Bay Area are out in the burbs are half empty. The roads are empty, and there's no barbecue smoke or poisonous vapors coming from my neighbor's fireplace. So they must be somewhere else, thank God. Ann Arbor, Michigan. Joe, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Michael, you would go absolutely stir crazy if you didn't live in such a liberal town. I moved from Ann Arbor, which is like mini Leningrad, to a little village called Dexter about 10 miles west. And I go to Ann Arbor daily. It's like going to a trip to the zoo. I see the freak show.
Yeah.
And it's,
you have to look at the Obama bumper sticker, Prius driving freak liars, hypocrites from hell.
I saw a bumper sticker the other day that said, I'm already against the next war.
That's nice. Yeah, they're already against everything, aren't they? Except, let's leave it at that. Look, the fact of the matter is, I have people say to me, why do you live in such a liberal city if you have such distemper with it? And I say, I am reminded of what Voltaire, the great French writer, said, is that he lives in Paris in order to document their foibles. In other words, how could he write about the foibles of the Parisian of his time if he didn't live around them?
Exactly. Cannon fodder.
Well, I wouldn't say cannon fodder. I'd say grist for the mill.
Well, there you go.
Enjoy Ann Arbor. Go have a double frappuccino espresso with beans raised at 4,600 feet with distilled water and cows that are raised on the moon. You ever hear them go into a coffee shop? It's not like your father says, give me a cup of coffee. Have you ever heard these people, how sick they are when it comes to a coffee? I'll take a double espresso latte, frappiano with distilled water with cows that are raised by organic goats in heaven. And on the side, I mean, I never heard anything like this. Never. It's San Francisco to a T, which is why I love it so much. But here we are near July 4th already, and we got the Chinese restaurant story, the Japanese, the Thai, and, you know, you can say no goo if you want. You say no oil and no sugar, but you know what you get instead. You get the horse glue. If you say you don't want no oil, you know what you get in the dish instead. Extracted hoof from like a slaughterhouse horse is what they give you if you're not careful. You got to be careful, too, what you say. because they're controlling what's going on in your mouth. You say low oil, okay? We'll give them low oil. Get the shoe glue from the dead horse in the back. Kansas City, Mike. Welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hey, Mike. I hear you asking if you complain too much, and I've been making an observation for some time now that really bothers me, and I just was wondering if you've made it too. I walk into an Asian restaurant, and I can always tell a table full of liberals, even before they even utter a single word about the woes of the world and how terrible it is that people have the right to be miserable. But they'll order their food, and then they'll ask the waiter, who probably grew up in America and has never even been to China, they'll ask him, how do I say that in Chinese?
Oh, God. Oh, to show that they're in solidarity with the immigrant. I love that.
Then they'll get their chopsticks, because they'll have to ask for them because the flatware.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's to show that they're politically able to use chopsticks.
Yeah. So then they get out their chopsticks and they rub them together to try to take off all the splinters and everything.
Yes.
I've never actually seen an Asian do that.
Yeah, even though I've never seen a splinter on a chopstick, they heard about it in 1971.
Yeah, yeah. And so then while they're doing this, they're completely oblivious to the fact that there's a table full of staff from the restaurant sitting there and using forks to eat their lunch. Meanwhile, the waiters...
Well, you must live near a university town for this to be going on. These are classic university behaviors.
Exactly, exactly. Yeah. And then, on top of that, the waiters, the only reason why they're speaking Chinese is because they're mocking these liberal dummies because they look like little kids because they're dropping food all over themselves and the table and the floor because they don't know how to use the chopsticks.
And the waiters are laughing about them and goofing on them in Chinese.
It makes me so disgusted. It's just disgusting.
Well, but look, Mike, you got to do what the last caller said. You just got to go there and watch the human comedy. I mean, liberals are the most laughable subpopulation in America. They don't understand it, but everyone else is laughing at them. They're social freaks because of their hypocrisy and their childishness.
Yeah, you were talking about how they talk about politics.
But your people over there, the libs in Kansas City in a Chinese restaurant, do they generally bow when they walk in? Don't they give a short little bow and their hands together?
I've actually seen that once.
Once. How about when the waiter gives them a glass of water? Do they all say thank you 50 times for the glass of water?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, but not only that, they have to have hot oolong tea on a 110-degree August day.
Oh, well, that's appropriate. What about the napkin? When the waiter gives them the napkin, don't they all bow and say thank you 50 times? Oh, thank you. Everything the waiter does, they give them a thank you. And when they pay, they say thank you to the owner of the restaurant. Instead of the owner saying thank you to them for the business, they thank him for letting them in the restaurant. How about that one?
Well, you know, Michael, the last time this happened, it was a date, and this guy was doing it to show off to his date. And at the end of the meal, after having to watch this and listen to his rhetoric and how happy he was about all the politics and everything that's going on, even though he seems to understand politics, but he can't even use a pair of chopsticks. After the meal was done, we both went up to the cashier to get to pay for our meal at the end. And I asked him, he didn't know that I knew the owner, and I've known him for years. But I asked him how he liked the restaurant, and he said, oh, it's great. And I said, you know, it used to be smoking, but it's not anymore. And I said, you know, so they didn't actually have to participate in the smoking ban. And I said, it's a good thing that smoking ban finally went through, huh? And he said, yeah, I voted for that. And I was like, yeah, I figured that. Well, you know, I find your speech as offensive as you found people smoke. I don't want to listen to your political rhetoric when I'm eating my meal.
Oh, really? And what did the guy say to that?
He just sat there and stared at me. And I just like, whatever, paid my meal and went out. You know,
Here's the last question of the day. Ask your friends in the Chinese restaurant what percent of the bill is tipped by liberals, what percent tip they leave.
Oh, yeah. You know what? I heard you say that once, and I asked them that because I was curious. And, yeah, they're pretty stingy.
Usually libs give a maximum of 8 or 9%. That's if they're not caught, if they don't run out of the restaurant entirely and leave it to somebody else.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. They're the worst tippers in America are the ones who are the most socially progressive. They're the biggest cheats in the country. But that's neither here nor there. We got bigger problems than that. Latest came out is the president, so-called, of Honduras, who the people threw out because he was a bum and a dictator, who Chavez supports, who Obama supports, who Hillary supports, who Castro supports. That president, that man that our president supports, has just been linked to drug ties, Figure it all out. I'll be right back. Very worrisome on the Savage Nation. Very worrisome. People don't see, if you have no historical knowledge of communism, you can't understand where we are in America. And I'm afraid that many of the people listening to the show think that it's preposterous to compare what is going on in America today with other, let us say, far left regimes that became pretty dictatorial. They don't have the context, so they laugh at you if you say, well, he's moving in that direction. That's because they were brainwashed from youth into not comprehending. They were purged. All the books were purged of any references to what communists did. And so therefore, they don't even understand the danger they are in. They are the perfect victims, preparing us for the perfect storm. But again, it takes some wisdom for people to understand this. And I can't help people if they were raised in the school systems of America over the last 20 years and don't have any idea what went on, whether it went on in 1917 in Russia, or whether it went on in other countries with communist dictatorships. They have no idea that we've had a revolution in America. Obama is leading that revolution. He has co-opted his opposition, first with the form of the billionaires. You could say, well, he didn't co-opt them, they used them. Well, that's exactly how dictatorships emerge. The dictators choose someone, and they think they can control that someone that they choose. Eventually, that someone winds up controlling them, because they usually outsmart the financiers. That's what Hitler did, and that's what many others have done. It hasn't happened here yet, but it will unless you stop it. I'm telling you, there's no... Right now, it just got worse today, by the way, because they took a clown, a totally unqualified clown, and put him into the Senate, a man named Al Franken, who, by the way, did what this guy Bruno did with the character Bruno, which is make mockery of gays. And you well know he'll get a pass for mocking gays because he's a leftist. You can mock gays if you're a leftist, but you can't do any such thing if you're not a radical leftist. Go figure that one out. New York City, Jimmy, I knew that you were going to call. Jimmy, make it quick. Here we go. You're on the Savage Nation.
Yes, I just want to reiterate that the communist movement is a world movement. Now, there's a lot of useful idiots who maybe don't understand what's behind it, but it's a world movement. It's organized. They meet. They write. They coordinate their activities.
All right, so how do you, a man who's been paranoid about the emerging red menace all your life, and rightly so, what do you make of Obama and Hillary Clinton taking the side of Castro and Chavez with regard to the dictator of Honduras?
This actually, I think it's kind of strange that they would be so blatant about it. This should be the signal that Americans understand, if they didn't see before, that the trouble we're in. I mean, there's a connection.
To me, this was the clearest sign yet that we have an overt neo-Marxist leader. The man basically got up. He may as well wave the red flag with a hammer and sickle on it. What do they need to have happen until they recognize who he is?
Well, the American people, we need to do a huge numbers of Americans need to do deep study and really learn and understand how Marxist work, the history and the goals, and then be
Jimmy,
able to
explain to people in 60 seconds or less what the big deal is about communism.
The communists, the world movement, it's a party, it's a movement of a party. A party doesn't need a state to exist. In other words, the Soviet Union collapsed the state but kept the party. They talked about creating a multi-party system, all controlled by the communists.
I understand, but will the people be worse off or better off under a worldwide communist dictatorship?
It'll probably be mass murder. A world communist movement, any dictatorship, would be terrible. Communist, fascist, but the communists have a history. They have
right.
Goals.
So I was reading from Mao's book, Out of Mao's Shadow, of what the Red Guards did to quote capitalists in China, what they did to their fellow revolutionaries in China. They killed them and threw them in mass graves. Are you worried about Obama saying he's going to create a civilian national security force bigger than the military? Yeah, of course you are. Well, I am. If it happens, I'm leaving the country. That'll be the signal it's all over. Where you can go, I don't know. I have no idea where you can go. But if Obama gets away with creating the equivalent of Red Guards...
Warning. Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Here's what I've been talking about today on the Savage Nation. Coleman concedes, and that means a comedian, a socialist comedian, has now joined the other comedians on the Democrat side. And the good news for the Communist Party USA is that the communists are now filibuster-proof in the U.S. Senate. The Communist Party USA, Democrats, now have a filibuster-proof majority with the entry of the comedian Al Franken. And so, therefore, get ready for the end of America. We're also talking about the media obsession. Turned on the TV again, not stopping about Michael Jackson pill popper. There's a five-second mention of what's happening in Iraq, and then back to wall-to-wall coverage of the king of pill popping. In the little time they're not praising a man who was accused of being a child abuser, they're attacking Sarah Palin, hailing the fall of the Republican Party, attacking a South Carolina governor, and praising the comedian Al Franken. Have you turned your television off yet? Or are you just not paying attention? Well, that's about it for today. There's many other stories, of course, in the Savage Nation. I told you earlier about the so-called victims of Bernie Madoff and his Ponzi scheme and how they want you to pay for their greed and stupidity. I want you to listen to the voices of a few of these people and tell me if you think they should be compensated with taxpayer dollars. You decide and listen. Go ahead.
He put his arm around my shoulder, and he said to me, don't worry, everything will be fine, and your investment will be safe with me.
He doesn't exhibit any emotion. There's no tears. There's no broken voice. It's just a recitation with inhuman recitation.
I don't believe he even has any remorse. This would have never continued for God knows how many years if he had remorse.
His wife was working right along with him. She's not stupid. She had to know.
Well, here's another one of these victims, Mr. Burt Ross. I mean, I'm sorry it happened to him, but here's what he thinks should happen to Madoff.
I urged the judge to do what he did, which was to sentence him for the rest of his life, that when he leaves prison, which means after his death, and he leaves prison virtually unmourned by anybody on this earth, that he will then go down to the depths of hell, where he'll join those other people who are in the mouths of Satan.
But what should happen to people who demanded 10% returns, 15% returns, every year off the backs of people who really work for it? Did they think there would be no consequences? Well, but Burt Ross thinks it's about a loss of trust. Listen to him again.
This is far more than the loss of money. I mean, that's terrible enough, and many of the people who invested with Madoff have addressed the court in terms of what it's done to their lives. But there was also a tremendous violation of trust. And trust is what we build everything we value on. We build our financial system on it. We build our relationships on it. We build love on it.
You know, this week Bernie Madoff was sentenced to 150 years in prison. No one could deny that the guy was a vile, scheming a con man of the lowest order. But how much better were some of his victims who demanded 10, 12, 15% returns every year, year in, year out, without questioning how it was done? How much better were a bunch of people who wanted to retire in their 40s and live off the hard work of other people? They've been everywhere in the media whining and complaining in the middle of a recession where people who have had to actually work hard for years just to get by are losing their jobs. And these Madoff victims are complaining that they have to get jobs. You have to listen to some of these people. There was an article by one of them that appeared in the New York Post. It was written by a woman named Sue Ambrosino, who was 56, and it was about how she and her husband, Dominic, who was 48, they had retired on their ill-gotten gains from Madoff and were driving around the country in their RV. Here's a quote from the article she wrote. Dominic is now forced to go back to work. He leaves at 4:30 a.m. to avoid the summer heat in Arizona. He's home by 10. He's home 10 or 12 hours later. Gone is our precious time together. Close quote. Well, her husband has to go out to work at an actual job. It may be a blessing for him to be out of the house and away from her. Here's another one. Phyllis Mulcatsky, 62 years old, who had $2 million that she gave to Madoff, says this. I want the SEC to help us to get our lives back financially. The most important thing is to get restitution to his victims. Do you hear that? These people are victims of what? Well, maybe of their own foolishness. And they want the government and your tax dollars to pay them back for their bad investment. And investment means risk, Mrs. Mulcatsky. You took a risk and you made a lot of money and then you lost a lot of money. That's called an investment. I frankly don't owe you a penny. By the way, Mrs. Mulcatsky, age 62 apparently, has some children age 18 months that she has adopted that she wants to raise. Wow. This is the problem with our society. Too many people claiming to be victims of others, not victims of their own decisions. Too many people expect to be able to live a lavish lifestyle without really working for it. Too many people expect others to bail them out when they get into trouble. It's a mindset that's been created by a generation of welfare, a generation of children who were told that they couldn't fail, a generation of people whose first reaction when something goes wrong is to blame it on someone else, sue them, and demand the government pay them back. Well, let me read you one of these letters from Miss Ambrosino, published in today's New York Post. That is from Phyllis Mulcatsky. She says, it's easy to express in dollars what I lost to Bernard Madoff. I invested $2 million, my life savings, at the end of 01 with him, and now it's all gone. The amount includes the $300,000 I had redeemed to pay my income taxes through the years on the phantom profits I earned through his phony investments. But I've also lost a big part of me. I think part of me died the day I learned of the fraud, along with so many hopes and dreams of the future. I may lose my house in Rockland County. My dream of giving my 18-month-old adopted son a better childhood than I had was stolen from me. Now remember, she is 60-some-odd years old. She has an 18-month adopted son. I don't know, maybe she's altruistic. Then she says, and my plans to adopt another child so that my son wouldn't be an only child, as I was, have gone up in smoke. The stress may be worsening my Parkinson's disease. What? I'm sorry, she has Parkinson's disease and she's able to adopt babies? She goes on, and I no longer have the comfort and security of knowing I had money to fall back on. I found it devastating when that was taken away from me in just a second. I've lost faith in a government that I once believed in. Wait a minute. You mean in Obama? He was going to save her? She goes on. It blows my mind to think that the SEC could have stopped Madoff's fraud years ago when the agency was explicitly warned before I even contemplated putting my money in. Well, that's from a lawyer, I think. I find it hard to believe. I want Madoff to suffer along with anyone who helped him, but what I really want more than anything, she says, is for the SEC to acknowledge its negligence and its failure to protect me and the other victims. Huh? This is written by the lawyer. And she says, I want the SEC to help us to get our lives back financially. Yeah, right. That means you and I should pay for her failed investment. She says, the Madoff sentence is only a small part of the story. The most important thing is to get restitution to his victims. Well, please, Mrs. Mulcatsky, I have to repeat, an investment entails risk. With high rewards such as 12% a year, when I, Michael Savage, was making 1% in a bank, I didn't take the risk, so I didn't lose any money. You took big risk, and you had a big loss. End of story. I don't owe you anything. This is the Savage Nation. Savage.
You know, I take a wait-and-see approach.
Well, I'm not. Look, that's what they're announcing. We have to accept that for the time being. But there's an awful lot of question about how this election was run. And we'll see. I mean, we're just waiting to see.
We like the rest of the world, are waiting and watching to see what the Iranian people decide.
You know, I take a wait-and-see approach.
Well, I am someone who's going to wait and see.
Waiting and watching to see.
We'll see. I mean, we're just waiting to see.
The Obama administration, which has an appease-first mentality, I think is putting our country at risk. The threat of war and terrorism is still strong, but instead of bolstering our defenses, we're making cuts to our missile defense program, which in wake of North Korea and Iran's nuclear mission seems like a terrible idea. Joining us today to talk about this is James Carafano.
Well, Michael, thanks. Thanks so much for having me on the show. Apparently, the words weapons of mass destruction are not dirty words anymore. So there's this new commission out. It's got Graham, the Democrat, Jim Talent, Republican, former senator from Missouri. They did this World at Risk, say, you know, shocker, weapons of mass destruction, it's a real threat. We need to worry about this. I think it's great. It's almost like because of Iraq, you know, we can't talk about that anymore. And here we are, North Korea's got a nuclear weapon. They're building missiles. Iraq's building missiles. Apparently North Korea has enough material to make biological weapons. You know, Al-Qaeda hasn't gone away. They still want to get these things. Hezbollah, Hamas. You know, I'm glad people are talking about this. So, well, what do we do? Well, you know, of course, there's a lot of people in Washington that have all the answers. And the answer is, let's just sign some more treaties. I think that's great. So the first thing Obama does is we're going to make the world safe. And we're going to negotiate with the Russians. That's his answer. You know, it's interesting. So, like, for example, we have a nuclear non-proliferation treaty. Well, that worked really well, because both Iran and North Korea signed that, and now they have nuclear weapons. What should we be doing? And you know, and I actually think it's a lot simpler than that. And the last thing you do is you start signing treaties. The first thing you do is you stop the people that want to kill you. So first of all, we have this non-state threat, right? We have people like Al-Qaeda and other people that want to get these things. What do you do? Well, the answer is, you know, you stop sitting around and scratching your head and saying, is it going to be a car bomb or a dirty bomb? What you do is you go out and you kill the terrorists. You get the leaders. You break up their networks. You stop their operations. You cut off their funding. You cut off your recruiting. And then you don't have to play Russian roulette trying to figure out how they're going to come at you. So that's number one. Number two is you get the bad stuff off the table. There is a marketplace out there. You know, there was this guy, AQ Khan in Pakistan, who sold, you know, Pakistani secrets to basically anybody that wanted them. And a lot of people want to go into this business and, you know, they want to basically trade in these technologies. Well, you got to stop that. We had a thing called the Proliferation Security Initiative that Bush started. Go out there, find out the people who are moving this stuff around and stop it. You know, interestingly enough, Obama says, yeah, I'm all for that. So when North Korea had a ship that they thought, well, there might be some bad stuff on there. Well, we said, well, we'll search it if they let us, and then we'll follow it, you know, to kind of keep an eye on it. And then the irony of ironies is the ship that's following, it's called the John McCain. So, you know, I'm not sure he gets it. But, you know, if he wants to stop this stuff, he's going to have to go out there and physically stop people from moving these things around. That's how we stopped AQ Khan. You know, we just went out, we confiscated stuff, and we told the Pakistanis, look, you got to put this guy away so he can't hurt anybody.
But what do we do about North Korea and Iran?
Well, you know, those are tough problems. But the first thing you do is you defend yourself. You know, this government doesn't want to build missile defenses. They cut 15% from the program. Well, that's kind of stupid. I mean, if you can't figure out how to stop the guy from getting missiles and nuclear weapons, at least defend yourself. And then they don't want to buy F-22s. These are the fighters that can, you know, penetrate any air defense in the world and take anything out. But they don't want to buy them. Well, if you can't hold the enemy at risk, you know, how are you deterring him? So you protect and defend yourself and your allies first. Okay, and then you know, we can start to figure out how we're going to roll back North Korea and Iran, these other bad actors. So I'm glad that I can say WND again and people don't spit on me, you know, and we're actually worried about these problems. But it really, really, really bothers me that the answer that this administration has is we're going to sign pieces of paper, because that worked really well, you know, like with the non-aggression pact with Hitler. You know, you sign papers with people you trust. You know, you don't sign papers with people that are trying to kill you. So, you know, thanks for having me. Thanks for thinking about this issue. It's really important that we get it out there before the American people again. But, you know, I'm afraid what these guys in Washington try to do is everything. They're going to take a good issue, and then they're going to hijack it to do something bad, like turn our sovereignty over to the United Nations, or, you know, spend a lot of money on stuff that's really stupid and isn't going to make us safer. But thanks again for having me.
Well, thanks for the report, James. That's all. So I'll take calls on anything that you want, whatever, movies, food, what kind of engagement ring to buy, what's the best shoe made, the best boat. I feel like giving advice today. Mike, can you tell me what kind of shoes to buy? I've turned the age of 40 and my arches are starting. Please, if you call on that, I'm quitting. George in Sacramento, welcome to the Savage Nation.
So, Father Savage, I have a 18-foot runabout in the Delta. Would it be a death wish for me to take that out through Benicia and run it into the San Francisco Bay around Alcatraz?
You're asking a loaded question. You used the word death wish. I didn't, right?
Yes.
George, on a calm day, yeah, but by the time you got from the Delta down to the Bay, the weather would change, right?
More than likely.
Yeah, and it changes very rapidly here, and I wouldn't recommend going out on the bay in an 18-foot boat unless your middle name is Nanook. All right, thanks. No, I wouldn't go out on the boat, the bay in an 18-foot boat. No, not me. No, 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 sir. Next case. Good time, Charlie. I saw a piece of a movie I saw before, 1945, black and white, Turner Classic Movies, TCM. No, I forget it already, the name. Why did I bring it up? Well, I don't even know. Barbara Stanwyck, where she builds up a restaurant and the husband's dead at the end. She's like, the husband leaves her. She's broke and she got a snotty daughter and the other daughter dies. Very good movie. I love the early L.A. scenes in 1940s L.A. All the men wore a hat. Everyone had like haberdashers in those days. The women wore gloves and suits. The streets, there were no gangbangers with tattoos running around the city. It was an amazing city. Hats, gloves, normal. You caused trouble, the LAPD beat you up and threw you down into a waterway and could cut down crime in Burbank and Pasadena. They were garden centers. Now they're shooting galleries with drive-bys. Wonderful. Isn't it great? Isn't America a great place? Wonderful place. Oh, America's much better now that it's highly diverse, particularly California. Bankrupt and crime-ridden with broken roads. Tremendous. And that moron Strudel leader, the governor, says that illegal aliens who are sucking us dry have nothing to do with the deficit. You hear this? What a putz. What a schmuck. You know, if he had any brains, he would say, well, they don't account for the whole deficit, but a part of it. The schmuck comes out and says they account for none of it. The health care alone for the illegal aliens is about $18 billion a year. It just shows you what he got between the ears. You know, too many pastries over the years.
Savage.
Here we go. Here's what's on MichaelSavage.com. The big story is that a comedian has won. Let me read you the headline. Comedian wins Senate seat. Senate now filibuster proof for Socialist Party USA. That would be none other than the comedy writer Al Franken, the ugly guy with big glasses I always mention, who writes for the so-called television comedians, is now an actual comedian in the Democrat side of the Senate. From the AP, 10 others to be charged in the Madoff probe. I think that's only the tip of the iceberg. From Rasmussen Reports, Obama's disapproval rating climbs steeply. You won't read that in the morning paper. Five states brace for shutdowns. That's right. You heard it. Not one of them will cut back on payments to illegal aliens in health or education. And by the way, in the state of California, 70% of the state budget goes for health and education payments. And by the way, we have the lowest educational success rate in the country. You know where the money's going? I don't. From Agence France-Presse, Al-Qaeda warns France of revenge for burqa stance. That means, although France said they oppose the burqa, the radical killers in Al-Qaeda are warning France that they're going to seek revenge. Apparently, their idea of women's liberation is to permit them to show their eyes. Going down MichaelSavage.com, there are other stories. Obama, Hillary, Castro, and Chavez, you heard me. Chavez and Obama, Hillary and Castro, are a new leftist oligarchy for the Americas. Witness the Honduras. You better wake up before it's too late. And by the way, Farrah Fawcett's jailed son was granted permission to attend her funeral. Why do all of these Hollywood stars produce such wrecks for children? 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. I have a number of other personal things I'm going to talk about. I may as well do it now, since you're not interested in the news. That's all. The news you can get anywhere. You can go to the internet and get it on Drudge. You can get it on this one, that one. You heard it all before already on Blani. Blani and Wallbang already covered it and then promoted their television show. They gave you a little job. Use the radio platform to push the TV show. But let me start with food, because that's something that I specialize in. And first of all, I had the best Chinese meal of my life. Yes, my friends own the restaurant. No, I get nothing for this. I haven't been there in over a year. But, you know, there's such a difference between Chinese food that you know and high-end cuisine that it's worth talking about. The reason I went is because they gave me a private dining room for four people. So I wasn't seen. I was not even heard. I was like a child, not seen nor heard, which is the only way I can eat. I don't like restaurants because I can't stand listening to other people talk. Call it a quirk. Call it a quirk of mine. I don't go out to dinner to listen to people scream. I don't go out to dinner to go listen to people scream and laugh. It doesn't entertain me. I don't need that kind of sensual stimulation. I'd prefer to eat a takeout meal in front of a television set. But anyway, I went out there, and I'm not going to describe the menu. There's one thing they have that no one else has, which is egg white rice. It's amazing. Very, very interesting dish. And then the usual, you know, the steamed fish, but and all sorts of other things. It was really lovely in a private room. Wonderful. Sunday, I went out on my boat with the captain. We would turn right at Point Bonita. If you go out under the Golden Gate Bridge, sailors know this. They do it all the time. I'm pretty much strictly a bay boater. The bay can be pretty exciting unto itself. On a windy day, the bay is like an inland sea. I mean, you can get some nice swell, some nice waves, spray in your face, crossing the bay to and from San Francisco. But if you go out under the Golden Gate Bridge and you drive about, 5 miles, you hit Point Bonita, which is the last point of land, and then you turn north in the channel. And about 5 miles out is a place you're never supposed to go over. It's like no man's land, called the Potato Patch, because they sometimes get monster rollers coming in over there, so you don't go there. And we went up the coast, and it wasn't very exciting. It was fulfilling. I got to tell you something. When I came back from the ride in my boat, which I've had 6 years, the Grand Banks is the greatest yacht ever made, by the way. Again, the boat's 6 years old, and everyone says, oh, Mike, how long do you think you're going to live? Get yourself another boat. You deserve it. You know, you can afford it. You know, I got to talk about something. Why get rid of something that's perfect? It's 6 years old. It has less than 400 hours on it, and I'm not here to auction the boat off. But this boat holds the water like no other boat I've ever been on, and the newer boats change the hull design from a Ed Monk design, which is a semi-displacement trawler hull. The boat will still do 15 to 18 knots with twin 365 turbo horsepower Cummins diesels, American-made, the best engines in the world. The boat's got started every time I ever started it in 6 years. Imagine having a boat that starts every time in six. You've tried it in 6 years. Go out, come back, get in bed at night to go to sleep. Now, normally I have a high degree of anxiety in my being. That's how I've lived all my life. I'm kind of an edgy person. I've been this way my whole life. And if it would have killed people, it's supposed to be so bad for you, anxiety and stress, I would have been dead at 11. So this is a thing that drug peddlers sell you, called the American Medical Association. They tell you you're supposed to lead a stress-free life. Frogs don't even lead a stress-free life. Nobody leads a stress-free life. It's a myth in order to sell you pills and psychotherapy. But I come back from the boat ride. I have zero anxiety in my being. And when I go to sleep at night, you know what I think about? I don't think about being banned in England. I don't think about Obama, the neo-Marxist. I don't think about him killing America's economy. I don't think about arming the fruit of Islam with guns and turning them into warriors to control the population a la Hitler. I don't think of any of that. In other words, my normal fears are gone. All I could think about was were the waves and the color of the water and how the boat moved in the water. There was a certain movement of the hull through the water, the way she gripped and moved and gripped and moved and gripped and moved and gripped and moved. The motion became unto itself a meditation. And I thought about something at night, and this is the point of the story. There was nothing exciting. There was nothing inherently exciting about the boat ride, but it was fulfilling. And that comes down to day-to-day life. Many of us are told by Moloch, who owns Fox News and newspapers and magazines and book companies and everything you turn, he's trying to get you excited into buying something. So he tells you to look for excitement. And the only way to get excitement is by buying something that one of his advertisers peddle. But let me tell you something. You should be seeking fulfillment, not excitement. And that's the problem with American society today. The children have been taught to seek excitement, not fulfillment. So they seek sex instead of marriage and children. Because they don't understand the fulfillment of being married and having children. All they've been brainwashed into thinking is that excitement is the end of human existence. And it comes back again to the same thing. Whether it be sports or salacious entertainment or bad fast food, all of these things are minimally exciting, but none of them are fulfilling. Now, you've heard all of this before. I'm pontificating on it because it came home to me over the weekend in a simple way. A simple boat ride up the coast, off the coast of San Francisco, gave me fulfillment, not excitement. And so the moral of the story is, the less excitement that you seek, the more fulfillment you will have. This is Father Savage back in a moment. There's a lot of news, there's no news. It's the best of times, it's the worst of times. You know, we could talk about news, we could talk not about the news, we could talk about Chinese food, Italian food, I'd say Irish food, but there is none. I'm joking, don't get mad. I've been in enough Irish bars to tell you that they're not known for that, okay? Let's not get angry now all of a sudden. Don't bring up anger now. Start telling me dishes with lamb, okay? Chicago, Tom, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Yeah, Michael, I wanted to know what health benefits, if any, are provided by the squid ink and squid ink pasta.
I give you the philosophy of 1,000 years of evolution. Don't seek excitement, seek fulfillment. I get a question about squid ink. All right, that's the nature of the business I'm in. Wait, I will refer to the Bible, Deuteronomy 27:12. If a caller asketh thou about squid ink after thou hast given thy heart and thy mind, tell him to shove it! I know, you don't actually find that in Deuteronomy. You will not actually find it. I don't think they deal with squid. I think it's one of the banned foods. Thou shalt not suffer a sorceress to live. I don't want to go into that. There's too many people in San Francisco. Everything that thou shalt not do, they do. An eye for an eye. You got to look those things up, an eye for an eye. Thou shalt not cover. I don't want to read the Bible. Leave me alone. I'm tired of religious now. I'm off religion. I think I'm giving up on the whole religious thing for a while. I am so jaundiced on religion and religious. I know you're going to be disappointed, but I'm not doing. I'm taking the whole summer off from it. I don't like fanaticism in any religion. I don't like it. We talk about radical Islam. How about radical everything else? You know, I know that the radical Christians don't kill and this and that today, but. You know, to me, the fanatics in religion worry me greatly, just as the fanatics in government worry me greatly. I don't like fanaticism. So I'll say, well, you're a fanatic because you believe in borders, language, culture. All right, so you define your enemy as a fanatic, whatever you want to say. I'm not into this whole religious thing. I think it's a racket. This organized religion bothers me. Sure, I believe in God. I'm going to give me the litmus test. First of all, it's my business whether I do or not, but I do. Why? Because I'm afraid that if I gamble wrongly, I'll be cast into you-know-where for eternity. So I have that basic, let us say, primal or childish view of the world. If you're braver than me and you don't care what happens to you after you die, all right, whatever. I was raised another way, and that's the end of the story. That's how I shall be. I'm pretty sure there's a creator. But truthfully, I can get closer to God through an elephant and through a gorilla. And giving to the gorilla fund and the elephant fund and seeing that anyone who poaches a gorilla and cuts his hand off, they hunt them down and they knock them off. You know, I mean, I gave money to a group that hires a military to go out and kill the poachers who cut off the tusks off elephants so the wonderful, sensitive, kindly Asians in North Korea can make penis shrouds with them. So I made up a statement. He who saves a single elephant, it is as though he has saved the entire herd. Mark it down. It's a takeoff on the Maimonides thing. He who saves a single life, it is though he saved the entire world, which is true. But at this point, I'd rather save an elephant. I have more faith now in the elephants and the gorillas than I do in human beings. I'm sick of it. I'm sick of the racket. I'm sick of the red and the black. You know, I read it years ago, the whole red and the black thing, where the only way to get ahead in Napoleonic France was, remember Stendhal's great book? I think it was Stendhal, wasn't it? The Red and the Black? Does anyone know? Look it up, see if I'm right. I think it was right. French writer, the book was called The Red and the Black, and it was about a young man who's ambitious in France, and he's trying to look ahead in his life, and how does he get ahead? There's only two ways to get ahead in Napoleonic France, either through the red or the black, either wearing the red of the uniform or the black of the priesthood. And it's about this aggressive individual who's, ambitious. And he has to choose either the red or the black. Nothing's changed here, and in some ways, I mean, it's not the military's not going to give you any great, let us say, external rewards in our country. The people who are committed in the military are truly patriotic and truly do it for their own satisfaction. They don't do it for any societal rewards. It's the same with the police. Let's put that aside. In trying to help us understand the hazards of psychiatric pills, Dr. Peter Breggin has developed a new scientific concept which he calls medication spellbinding. What? He joins us now to explain how he came by this scientific concept and what it really means.
Michael, over the years as a psychiatrist, I've evaluated innumerable cases of individuals driven over the edge by psychiatric drugs. When I was reevaluating about 100 of these clinical cases for my new book, Medication Madness, I began to see a pattern that I call medication spellbinding. Medication spellbinding has four basic effects. First, people taking psychiatric drugs rarely realize how much the drugs are impairing them mentally or emotionally. They often do not recognize that they've become irrational, depressed, angry, or even euphoric since starting the drug. Second, if they do realize that they are having painful emotional feelings, they do not attribute it to the drug, but instead blame their feelings on something else or someone else. They get angry at their husbands, wives, or children and become abusive, or they may blame themselves and become suicidal. They may even just blame it on their mental illness without realizing that it all got worse or began with starting the psychiatric drug. Third, medication spellbinding makes some people feel that they're doing better than ever, when in reality, they're doing much worse than ever. In one case, a man was high on a combination of antidepressant and tranquilizer drugs, and he went happily on a daylight robbery spree in his hometown, wearing no disguise. Another happily embezzled money while documenting it all in the company computer files. Both men thought they were on top of the world. Fourth, some people become so medication spellbound that they will lose control of themselves and perpetrate horrendously destructive actions. My book opens with the story of an otherwise kind and gentle man who becomes agitated on an antidepressant and drives his car into a policeman to knock him down to get his gun to kill himself. Or the 10-year-old boy with no history of depression who hung himself after taking a prescription stimulant for ADHD. Particularly striking to me, none of the people I have evaluated has ever perpetrated again after stopping the offending medication. I've had zero recidivism in the cases where the individual has stopped the drug.
Do the same things happen with any psychoactive substances such as alcohol or marijuana?
Well, to some degree, the same things can and do happen. When a person's drunk, he might think he's the life of the party when he's the death of it. And of course, alcohol and street drug intoxication are associated with a great deal of crime and violence. But there is a difference between the effects of taking drugs on your own and taking drugs prescribed by a physician. Most people believe that their doctor would never give them anything that could make them violent, suicidal, or just plain crazy. Often the doctor reassures the unwitting patient that the patient needs to take more of the drug that's making him crazy.
I understand the law makes a distinction between people who act badly while using drugs or alcohol on their own and people who act badly when the drug has been prescribed by a physician.
Exactly. If you do something irresponsible under the influence of alcohol or an illegal drug, the law is likely to hold you responsible. You should have known better than to get intoxicated, and you should have foreseen the risks. But if you've been prescribed a drug, especially without being given any warnings about the potential dangers, that's called an involuntary intoxication. You're not aware of the risks and dangers. You're simply following your doctor's prescription by taking something that's supposed to help you. The law looks more sympathetically on involuntary intoxications.
Well, sounds like you're saying any psychoactive substance impairs judgment, but psychoactive drugs like antidepressants and tranquilizers are more insidious and potentially more dangerous.
Yes, all psychoactive substances impair brain function, and with that, they impair judgment. But people who are a little tipsy on alcohol or a little high on marijuana may experience this impairment as enjoyable. People may experience temporary emotional anesthesia or an artificial high on a psychiatric drug. However, in every case, it's a manifestation of brain dysfunction, and judgment is always impaired. I have no objection to the occasional and responsible use of recreational drugs like alcohol, but I strongly object to the idea that any drug can help people solve their personal problems. Psychiatric drugs work by impairing brain function, and when we're under stress and have problems to solve, we need a fully functioning brain and mind. We need to be able to take complete responsibility for ourselves and to think through our problems with rational clarity. All psychiatric drugs impair those higher mental functions. Instead of a drug, we need courage, determination, self-discipline, and sound principles to face and overcome our personal problems. That brings us to what I call the primary principles, the refrain of my weekly report: protect freedom, take responsibility at all times, express gratitude for all your gifts and opportunities, become a source of love. You can find me and listen to all of these reports and download the transcripts at Breggin.com. That's Breggin.com.
Dr. Breggin, thanks for being on the Savage Nation.
Savage.